The Israel Report with Rolene Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Rolene Marks, how are you?
I'm good, and you? And speaking of supporters, my cat took huge exception to me watching Lion Whisperer YouTube. So if you hear a loud yowl, that's either me being bitten or the
mutilated.
Cat.
Mutilated. All right. Or you mutilating the cat. Absolutely. All right. Let's get straight to some of the subjects we wanted to discuss with you. Israel has finally released a policy on Hamas and the Palestinian Authority. What is it?
Well, while you were watching musical parliamentary chairs, we were watching with bated breath to see what our government's going to do about the recently signed recon deal between Hamas and Fatah. And I think after much deliberation, the government has come out with a policy that says they will no longer hold peace talks with the Palestinian Authority following the reconciliation agreement it reached with Hamas, unless Hamas, who is regarded as a terror group, renounce terrorism and recognize the Jewish state. So it looks like Israel, for once, putting their preconditions very, very firmly on the table if we are to move to any kind of peace negotiations between us and our neighbors. And what our conditions are include the dissolution of Hamas's arsenal, so therefore de-weaponizing, the return of Israeli citizens and the bodies of IDF soldiers being held by Hamas in the Gaza Strip. That would be the return of Oron Shaul and Hadar Golden. May their memories be blessed, as well as citizens who are still in captivity. We also want the restoration of Palestinian Authority security control in Gaza, including at border crossings, and our education minister Naftali Bennett the last few days saying that he believes that Israel should continue to work with the Palestinian security forces. And also, we want the terror infrastructure in the West Bank dismantled, and that is a continued incitement and continued build-up in the West Bank. And we want the end of Hamas's ties with Iran. If all these conditions are met, we will be prepared, perhaps, to resume negotiations.
That said, Rolene, it seems to me, and when we look at the news, it does appear that Iran is becoming more and more emboldened and getting closer to the borders of Israel through in Syria.
Well, just hours ago, we had an announcement from the government that Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu, who has told Israel that Moscow will expand their buffer zone along the Israel-Syrian border, where we know that Iran and Iranian-backed Hezbollah forces have been trying to encroach on territory, and they will increase the buffer zone by at least 10 to 15 kilometers to push away Iranian and Hezbollah forces. Israel originally wanted a 40-kilometer buffer zone, but we are prepared to meet the Russians with what they have put on the table, and this is by this was told to the London-based Al-Shaq Al-Awsat, which is a Saudi newspaper, which is London-based. So very, very interesting maneuverings happening in the region as we speak.
What's always been worrying me is we've seen this kind of pattern playing out in the Middle East fairly frequently, often triggered by the United States, where they would either get involved, destabilize a government, or try and help, even with the best of intentions, but create a vacuum that would be filled by all the wrong people. Syria, being one of Israel's neighboring countries, is a perfect vacuum, unfortunately, for terror, for Iran, for ISIS, for anybody that decides that they want a base in that region.
And the worry now is because of Russian intervention and Russian support, it looks like the civil war, which has raged on for several years now and has killed hundreds of thousands of civilians. Have you heard that out there, human rights activists? Because you don't really seem to speak about it much. Hundreds and thousands of Syrian civilians seems to be going the way of Assad. And this, of course, is a concern to many in the region.
One actually just wonders. I stand aghast at it. We've had very clear, unequivocal proof, even accepted by the United Nations, that Assad has used chemical warfare on his own people. And yet somehow he is being allowed to slowly creep back into power, where he will continue to decimate the people that he's responsible for.
We seem to live in an Orwellian universe where this is allowed to happen, where there are no hashtags, we are Somalia after 300 people lose their lives in a terror attack the other day, and where countries like Qatar, the Congo, and Pakistan are elected to the UN Human Rights Council.
It's astounding. And on that note, we were chatting to David Effune a little bit earlier, about the Congo and, training Hezbollah. But why don't you give us some perspective there? Because, yesterday we did speak about the fact that the Congo has also been elected to the, United Nations Human Rights Council and, in what I guess is unsurprising, but horrifying move.
Well, this is quite interesting, and this is a report that has been published in the Algemeen, and I really would encourage people to subscribe to the Algemeen. It's algemeen.com. It's a very, very good newspaper aimed at the intelligentsia. Their reports are very, very thorough, and there's no doubt that it is possibly why you have the editor-in-chief, David Effune, on the show, Howard, because I know that your standards are very high.
indeed.
she says, flipping her hair around. Anyway, back to the report. So it has come to light that Hezbollah has been using banks with very, very close ties to the president of the Democratic Republic of Congo to launder money and maintain their terror funding network. And this is under the control of a Hezbollah financier. This is known within the Washington DC based anti-genocide advocacy organization called Enough. They have documents which show how Hezbollah financiers have used the BGFI bank DRC to move money around the international banking system. And this, of course, is in violation of US sanctions on Hezbollah and other terror groups. And, the CEO of this bank is Francis Selamani Mtwale, and he is the brother of the president, Joseph Kabila. And the report goes on to show that transactions were carried out by subsidiaries of this Kinshasa-based business, bank and their business conglomerate, Congo Futures, which is a company that has already been sanctioned by the U.S. Treasury Department. And they have subsequently warned senior bank officials, including Mtwale. And these reports have been completely ignored, and the document goes on to show how the BGFI bank even went so far not just to ignore them, but to request that certain transactions be unblocked by the Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control. And the money is trickling into our dear friends Hezbollah, and they have allowed the chief financial contributor, his name is Kasim Tajuddin, and he has contributed tens of millions of dollars to Hezbollah. I mean, just imagine if that money was used to build hospitals or schools or feed people or, you know, promote dialogue. Imagine what one could accomplish with that money.
What I don't understand is there a link between Congo and Hezbollah, or have Hezbollah really just seen the weakness in the financial system, because the global banking system is working very, very hard to cut down on the finance of terror. So have they just seen a gap, or is there some kind of a link, ideological link that I'm missing here?
Well, I think it's more of the former rather than the latter. I think that countries like the DRC, where there is a lot of corruption, and also the DRC is one of the world's most poverty-stricken countries, and they are so hit by political and economic corruption, and this creates, to use a word you used before on the show, a vacuum that enables these terror organizations like Hezbollah to take advantage and exploit the systems. And I think that also, when it does come, it might not be like ideological simpatico, but when we look at human rights abuses and records of human rights and transnational crimes, we have countries like the Congo right at the top of the list. And so there is probably some kind of honor amongst thieves or birds of a feather.
Amazing. Absolutely. Talking about birds of a feather, Knesset is working on a bill to end funding for groups like Breaking the Silence. How's that going?
Well, they've started working on their legislation. We know last year they worked on legislation that would ban any organizations that call for boycotts or put IDF soldiers on trial for war crimes to be banned from entering the state of Israel. So last year, the whole issue was about transparency, and now the Knesset is going for the donors, going for the donations. And thanks to organizations like NGO Monitor, and a special shout-out to mutual friend Sean Sachs, who does incredible work within NGO Monitor, we are now able to track where the money is coming from, who the NGOs they are going to, and we've got so far 25 out of 27 NGOs that are listed by the Justice Ministry and are primarily funded by foreign governments. You know, it's a very, very disturbing trend, because the governments that seem to want to push for negotiations and for peace in the Middle East also seem to have a dog in the race. You know, I always wonder, and perhaps this is the cynic in me, or perhaps I'm seeing too many conspiracy theories around, but for me, international organizations like UNRWA and many of these organizations would cease to exist if there's peace in the Middle East. So and this is my personal opinion, right. I think that there are endeavors to kind of stir the pot, so to speak, because otherwise what would happen to their funding?
I think it would be such an interesting,
and their relevancy.
It would be such an interesting exercise to do, to work out the industry or the sector of industry that is terrorism. And I don't mean just the flow of illegal funds. I'm talking about the flow of legal funds to support this massive terror network. What would happen if terror had to disappear tomorrow from some of these regions? What would everybody do, those who are supported by this industry? So it's actually a fascinating thought.
It is a fascinating thought, and I think that there is an article in there somewhere, Howard, hint, 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 nudge, nudge, nudge. Oh. Only because I'm the hugest fan of your work.
All right, I know, I've been remiss. Right. I will write, I will definitely get something down on paper very, very shortly.
But it's a very, very important question that we need to be asking. What happens when the terror funding runs dry? I mean, just back to the Democratic Republic of Congo. I mean, just the fact that it's called the Democratic Republic of Congo is an irony when 5 million Congolese have died as a result of genocide in the country. We've spoken about Syria, where hundreds of thousands have died during the civil war, including by such heinous methods like being gassed.
It's unbelievable. Absolutely, absolutely incredible. We've got a few minutes more, so I can fit in the final story. And that's a Labour leader has said that there's no need for settlement evacuation. Now, this is apparently dividing the opposition. Tell us what's going on there.
Well, I know. I also heard, like, you know, that needle scratch on a record. I heard that when I came across these headlines this morning. It was like, what? You know, this is not normally the language that we hear from the opposition.
Absolutely.
But But he says, if you make peace, why do you need to evict settlers? He says he thinks it's the terminology in which you are accustomed to speak here, by which you make a peace treaty if you evict people, is not necessarily right. And he said this to the Hebrew media. He says, if you make peace agreements, you can find solutions that don't oblige you to dismantle settlements because you're making peace. And he actually makes a very, very good point. And it's one I've often thought about, is that if we have a legitimate peace partner on the other side, why do you need to reject these settlers? Surely they can be absorbed there. You know, for them, it's about the sanctity of the land. And many have said, we don't care under whose government we fall, as long as we live on land that is holy to us.
Incredible. I even think that the term settler is such an offensive term.
It is extremely offensive, and I know that there are some entities within organizations like the UN who are putting pressure on companies in Israel not to do business with these so-called settlers, which is such an offensive word. In fact, even pressuring a company like Bezeq that provides internet and phone lines, etc., to not deal with them. And that is just, I mean, that to me is, you know, I have a real flashback to 1939 Germany.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. Unfortunately, Rolene Marks there, we do have to leave it. It is 5:28. That's Rolene Marks with the Israel Report. She'll be joining us tomorrow, whiskey in hand, for the Thursday afternoon, edition of the Israel Report. And don't forget, the Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency.